You're listening to The Impromptu on the Hologram Radio Network, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. I'm Alex Knight, and I am joined by Michael Norton, Chief Creative Officer. How are you, Michael?
Pretty good. You?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Cool.
So what's going on?
Well, Mac Stories posted a rather interesting article this week where they went over an entire concept for iOS 10. And I have to say, I want all of it.
It's everything you wanted and more?
Pretty much. Top highlights include Siri API, textual interface for Siri, drag and drop for split view multitasking, dark mode, and link previews in iMessage, all of which I think are pretty doable. And a lot of it, I think, is actually coming in iOS 10.
I should hope so. I mean, a lot of those things are things I think Apple's been working up to. Clearly, with the whole new larger iPads, the split view, they obviously want productivity and multitasking to be like a thing on iOS. So I think it only makes sense that we get those things. But, you know, on the flip side, people have just been clamoring for those kind of things for years, and especially in that, the term gets thrown around a lot, but Apple saying we're in a post-PC era, it's like, well, are we? Because there's a lot of stuff we really can't do on an iPad. And if you want people, if the future is you think people are just going to be using these slates, then we need this functionality. Like, it needs to be convincing enough for people to get off a Mac and be able to do the same things that they normally do on a Mac without any additional friction.
Yeah, I think this year is the year for that. Apple didn't release a second iPad Pro by accident. They could have just released another iPad Air, iPad Air 3, and called it a day, but instead they said, hey, here's another iPad Pro, and we've even thrown in more advanced technology than the first iPad Pro, which peeved some early adopters of the 12.9-inch iPad Pro, but...
That's why I didn't buy it.
Well, I didn't buy it because it cost an arm and a leg.
Well,
but,
it does cost an arm and a leg, but yeah, I think the right time to buy will be... At least I should specify for me, the right time we'll buy will be the second generation 12-inch iPad Pro, because then it'll have the 10-bit color gamma stuff. It'll have the true tone. It'll have 3D touch. It'll have the faster Touch ID sensor, all of that good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how the hardware evolves, but I think the hardware this year is just one half of the story. The other half of the story is iOS 10, and I think with the power of the A9X chip, with all of this horsepower, iOS needs to be able to do something with it. And I think that's exactly what they're going to bring in iOS 10. They're going to say, so we have these iPad Pros, and they're about as powerful as a MacBook now. So we thought it would be pretty good to bring in some OS X features. I say, imagining how they're going to market it at the keynote as they stand up there, you know, Federighi will be all like, yeah, we thought we'd bring in some stuff. And one of the things I'm hoping they do, this is probably the most debatable one, but what I'm hoping they do is change the home screen.
Oh, please. Like, please.
Have you seen the home screen on the 12-inch iPad Pro? It's a joke.
It's terrible.
It's a terrible joke. Like, whoever thought, oh yeah, we have this massive screen, let's put an incredibly sparse grid of icons on it.
Well, they didn't even bother adding like another, allowing you to have another row of apps.
Yeah,
why didn't they do that?
They didn't even do that. Exactly. So my thought is they're giving very little attention to that because they've intended on throwing that away for iOS 10. And that hopefully we'll see an entirely new home screen paradigm on tablets.
And if not for iPhones at first, at the very least something bespoke for iPads to start with. Because that's where the biggest problem is.
Yeah.
I think universally everyone would agree with that, that the biggest issue we have right now is these huge screens. They're just not taking advantage. The software is not taking advantage of that space.
Well, split view is. And a number of other things are.
I'm just talking about the home screen. So staying on topic here with the home screen.
But yeah, the home screen, absolutely. They kind of broke the mold with the iPad 1 and they said, well, let's just stretch out the iPhone home screen. That's fine, right? And even worse, I would say, is the notification center.
Right.
That is totally not using all the available space either. They've got these, like, it's not even full width. Like, if you pull down Notification Center on the iPad Pro, it's like, you've got this one column.
Got, like, 4 inches of space on each side.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing.
It's pretty terrible. So I'm really hoping that in iOS 10, they've done something to correct this.
I think Notification Center looks even worse on the 12-inch iPad in landscape mode.
Yeah,
it's like this
barren
wasteland.
What I mean. That's what I'm talking about in landscape mode. Like portrait, not so bad,
right?
But landscape,
yeah.
There's so much you could do with that space, and they're just not doing anything,
right?
And even some of the apps, it surprises me. Like a lot of the apps are still very sparse, and they don't. Like Apple system apps even don't take advantage of all that space.
Well, it's not just Apple's apps, but a lot of people have been complaining about third-party developer apps and how they just have not been taking advantage of that extra space that they need to be redesigned and rethought for the larger iPads. I'm not sure why that hasn't happened yet. I mean, not like they've had a lack of time.
I think it's because the primary revenue source for apps is often the iPhone. So the most attention gets thrown there. And then the iPad universal version is just like, oh, just stretch it out. No big deal. Whatever.
I think Twitter's app was, I don't know if it's still like that because I don't use it, but they notoriously had a terrible iOS iPad app.
It still is, as far as I know.
There's a lot of white space.
The iPad version of Twitter is literally a stretched out iPhone app that used auto layout. Like it's not blurred or anything, but it's using auto layout and it's basically just filling the available space with nothing, which is horrible. But that's why I use Tweetbot, which is a far better iPad app.
It is a far better iPad app. It's a better Twitter client in general overall. Yeah. However, it's still lacking some things that the API is not exposed, which is frustrating, like Twitter polls.
Yeah.
Like you can't send images in a direct message. Twitter moments, that's debatable whether or not people actually like that. But Twitter moments is not available either.
Yeah, I don't really care because
I don't either.
It's Twitter's fault that the client can't do those things, or any client other than Twitter's.
And ads are missing.
I'm sure.
Frankly, I miss ads.
Oh, God. I mean, I need to see sponsored tweets.
There's nothing more that I want to see than
ads. So bad. I want sponsored tweets in my timeline. They're just the best. Like, Twitter really needs to get their act together. But that's beside the point.
Said everyone for the last 5-6 years.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, When the people that use your service have a better idea of how your service should work than you do, there's a problem there.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, we got derailed, I think, from talking about iOS 10. But yeah, the video is fantastic. Being a nerd, I was practically drooling when I watched that. I was like, oh my God, that is all the stuff I want in iOS 10.
And I think the thing that really made it amazing for me is that the amount of detail they put into that video, just the sheer
thought, like, and care,
it feels like solutions Apple would have.
Well, it was done by people who truly understand where iOS has been and where it should be going naturally.
Yeah. And in my opinion, Apple should really hire Sam Beckett.
That's the guy that did the video, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Viticci worked with him.
Is he a writer, a columnist on Mac Stories, or is he just
the guy that did the video? He's a designer. Okay. He also made a really good control center concept a while back.
Okay. Because the name sounds familiar, so I'm sure I've seen something else he's done.
Yeah.
But it's...
So yeah, Apple should really hire him.
Yeah.
And... I mean, it honestly wouldn't surprise me if some of the things he has in this video are things that Apple has added to iOS 10. That wouldn't surprise me in the slightest. And it also wouldn't surprise me if they looked exactly the same.
What kind of impact, I mean, other than satisfying, at the very least, the nerds that have been wanting these features, what kind of impact do you suspect iOS 10 will have on computing as a whole? Where we're going with the supposed transition away from traditional desktops more and more.
So
it's a slow transition, but obviously it's happening more and more.
I think for iPad, we are going to see a better iCloud drive. They are finally going to bring in a file system of some sort. That has to happen. The multitasking is going to improve.
Well, I thought the iCloud Drive app and the way iCloud Drive folders work was sort of the capitulation to the quote-unquote file system that's missing.
Well, it is and it isn't. It really needs to be more deeply embedded into the file system.
There's no doubt about that.
Into the OS. Like, if I am in an app and I want to grab something from another app, it shouldn't be stored in that app. It should be in iCloud Drive. iCloud Drive should effectively function as the file system for an iOS device.
Right, I agree.
If I have something in another app, it should be a folder in iCloud Drive, and I should be able to just go, okay, open file, take it from iCloud Drive, bam, it's in this other app now. And just like in the video, I should also be able to drag and drop things from one app to the other if they're in split view. That's a no-brainer. Like, all of these things, I think nobody is suggesting that they shouldn't happen. Like, these are all things that really need to happen for the iPad to be taken seriously as a computing device. And of course, the holy grail, Xcode for iPad, which I think is going to happen this year.
You really think it's happening this year?
Yes.
I know it's inevitable that it'll happen at some point.
I think it's going to be 100% fully featured to start with.
Yeah.
I think it'll be Swift only.
Right.
I think
course,
it might only do Swift Playgrounds to start with. It might do more. It might even let you compile iPad apps directly on device.
Just quickly refresh my memory, and also for the listeners too, who are not developers. What are the differences? Like, there's Swift Playgrounds, which is what?
So a Swift Playground is basically a self-contained little block where you can play around with Swift code, and it'll output it in a window beside the code. It's a really easy way for people to get into Swift and just see how it ticks.
So you don't actually have to compile the app every time
Every time you type something in, it'll compile it in the output window.
I think that's a complaint I've seen from Xcode, is that why do we have to recompile apps every single time?
Yeah. So the Playground is kind of a self-contained thing for that. The only problem extending that functionality to actually making an iOS app is that it's not quite that simple.
Right. It's always
There's frameworks and APIs and all kinds of stuff that has to be taken into account. That being said, I think Xcode for iPad, it's basically going to come down to what they were able to cram into it this year. Obviously, they will continue updating it. 1.0 will be a big step, though. Just the fact that it's on the device says a lot. And I think that's definitely going to happen this year. One piece of evidence, and I'll admit it's a bit shaky, but if you go on the WWDC site, the font being used on that site is a monospace font that is very clearly a brand new monospaced variant of San Francisco. Now, why would Apple make a monospaced version of San Francisco?
Well, I didn't, first of all, I didn't even know that there wasn't one.
Yeah. Yeah, there isn't. It's only been used for UI so far.
Yeah, and to make it, if it was just a matter of, well, we didn't get around to including it, we'll include it now, I don't think they would have made it part of the banner and advertisement. And
no,
they're not going to create all this fanfare about a monospace font unless there's something else that we don't really know.
Exactly.
So that is a that's very clear to me that there's something more to that.
What better way to showcase a new monospace system font than by putting it on Xcode for iPad?
Right, of course.
And of course, a redesigned Xcode 8 on OS X. In fact, I think that dark theme with the dark purple background, that might even be a theme in Xcode
maybe
from now on. It might even be the default theme.
If this actually happens this year, people are going to faint.
People are going to lose their minds. Like, Xcode on my iPad Pro, I can, like, and more importantly, if it's that you can actually compile an iOS app directly on an iOS device.
Well, it's not like there's a lack of power on it.
No, exactly. And the iPad Pro might even be able to emulate an iPhone. Like, you could probably write an iPhone app and then have the iPhone simulator running right next to
the screen is big enough.
Yeah, exactly. People will go nuts for this. Like, Federighi is just like, Xcode for iPad, video plays. Everyone's just like,
and more on that, looping this back, sort of dovetailing this with iCloud Drive talk, all your projects are synced in iCloud Drive between
devices. Exactly.
You start it on an iPad.
And finish it on your Mac. Exactly.
That is going to be incredible.
Exactly. Now you see how this all comes full
I'm
circle.
I am.
So
I'm getting excited.
I think, like, if I were going to make an educated guess about what's going to be announced at WWDC, at the very least, bare minimum, we're getting Xcode for iPad, redesigned iCloud Drive for iOS, new multitasking features for iPad, Siri API, that is definitely absolutely coming this year. It has to, because they have to compete with Alexa and all that other stuff. Like, they just have to do it. If they don't have it ready by now, where the hell is it? And I think this year they are going to introduce a dark mode for iOS. There will be a dark theme for the UI. And I will tell you why that's going to happen. Because next year, the iPhone is going to OLED. That is like 90% certain at this point. And as I've said before, the whole point of OLED is that if the screen is black, those pixels are not turned on. Meaning, if you have a dark UI, you're saving battery power. So, what better way to lead developers into that is by introducing a dark mode this year, and then by the time 2017 September rolls around, they say, oh hey, here's the new iPhone with this incredible shiny new design with an OLED screen. The entire OS is now dark by default, And if you wrote your app to support dark mode, it'll support the new phone automatically. So if they bring it into iOS 10 now, they're essentially giving developers 2 years to add the support before they make the move to OLED.
Yeah, they'll need the time for sure. But I really sincerely hope that OS 10 gets the dark theme treatment because it needs it, and it needs night shift. It really needs night shift.
Yeah. Yeah, OS 10 or Mac OS as it will be called.
Yeah.
As of WWDC. That's definitely happening.
Right.
There's
I'm sure
some
at the very least that is like the probably one of the least complicated features. I'm talking about night shift specifically.
Yeah, I would think they'll add it. It makes sense to add it. And obviously Siri is coming.
I mean, in night shift too.
Oh right.
They probably were thinking about it a year ago, and I just don't want to believe that they would not have had even a passing thought about adding it to OS 10 as well.
Well, I mean, Flex works on OS 10 and it worked on iOS before Apple brought in night shift and was like, no, I drink your milkshake.
Right. And Apple clearly knows based on the current research that's available. Obviously, they implemented this fully supporting the evidence that the blue light can interfere with your circadian rhythm. So it only makes sense to add it on every OS and device.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm pretty sure it will make a debut on Mac OS this year. I also think, and this is why I'm fairly certain there will be a Siri API this year, Siri is also coming to Mac OS this year. So with Siri on all platforms, there needs to be a way to tie apps into that thing.
Yes.
So I think Siri is probably going to get a rather large upgrade this year. Obviously, to start with, there won't be a lot of integrations. I think Apple will partner with their usual suspects. So there will be Yelp integration, OpenTable integration, Facebook integration, like all the top apps that Apple usually does business with. There will be Siri integrations for all of those at launch. And then other developers that want to add it, obviously they get the iOS 10 beta, they add in all the hooks, and bam, Siri will just work with the app.
It really bugs me. I feel like I want to go on a tangent about this, but it really bugs me that notifications are still kind of crappy on iOS, that we don't have something that I think we should have had for a while, like on Android, if you get 20 notifications from a map, I'm sorry, I should not have 20 individual notifications on my lock screen. Those should be rolled up as one, and it should just say, you have 20 notifications.
Yeah,
it's so frustrating.
I'm pretty sure that's going to be part of the quality of life updates for iOS 10. It's something they can't really ignore anymore. They added quick replies, but I think they can go a lot further than that. And in fact, with Siri getting smarter, she could probably kind of micromanage your notifications. Like you could be like, Siri, what's going on? And she can like read off things. That might get a little annoying.
I've never tried it. If it doesn't work now, you should be able to say, hey, Siri, clear my notifications.
Yeah, that should be a thing. And I don't know why they've resisted this for so long, but there should be a clear all button on the notification center.
Oh my God, please.
I don't know why they haven't done it.
Yeah. I don't understand this.
It's bizarre to me, but yeah, they really need to add that too. We used to say, oh, there's not a lot of low hanging fruit anymore, but there really, really is. And I'm hoping that now that iOS is really stable, like iOS 9 was not a major feature release. It was mostly to clean up the operating system and make it more stable, which is true. It's now more stable than ever. And now I feel like iOS 10, it's the 10th version of iOS. 10 is kind of a big number for Apple. OS 10, iOS 10. It's going to be the 10th anniversary of the iPhone. Like, all of these things converging, it's a big deal. And I feel like iOS 10, therefore, needs to be a really big feature upgrade. And
well, I wouldn't disagree with that. But what about getting rid of the Mac prefix in front of Mac? Oh, actually, I'm sorry. We don't even have Mac. I'm saying getting rid of the X in OS 10, which increasingly seems to be strange and unnecessary to me. And why don't we just call it Mac OS?
Well, that's exactly what's happening this year.
So you actually think the rebrand is actually going to happen too, in, as far as the name is concerned?
I'm fairly certain that it's happening, just based on things that have been found in the code and comments that have been made by Apple executives. It's 80 to 90% certain that they're rebranding OS 10 to Mac OS this year. Whether the version number actually goes above 10, I'm not sure. It could be Mac OS 11 this year. I don't know.
Right. It's the version numbers and the name now, just it's ugly. OS X 10 dot. It's like X is a Roman numeral. So OS 10, 10 dot, like,
yeah,
what?
It gets very odd. And it's kind of interesting that they haven't bothered changing it up until now.
But probably just wasn't, you know, it's like
it's low on the radar.
They have the priority list. That's like the least of their worries. Can we make iCloud services work first?
It's like, well, that's a whole other story. Supposedly there's a bunch of infighting right now in Apple.
About
iCloud.
About iCloud?
Yeah.
Well, iCloud Drive's not bad. Certainly not the unreliable
trash. But the thing is, a lot of iCloud right now is running on Amazon.
Right.
Or Google. So Apple actually wants
to... Oh, you're saying Apple's not happy about that?
No, they're not, for obvious reasons.
It's also expensive, and they don't... Or do they? They don't have the expertise, though, to run their own cloud, truly bespoke cloud computing platform.
They do have some people now.
It's not that they can't hire people to do it, but that's many years of work, coding.
There is an active project within Apple to convert everything to an in-house solution.
Now, keep in mind also the risk involved with doing that, because they've never done it, and it wouldn't be proven. So they would be putting everything on the line on this working flawlessly from day one.
Yeah.
So that's risky.
It's a risky big move, but it's something that they do eventually want to do because they want control over their own destiny.
Well, I think there's that part I wouldn't ever argue with anybody, because if anyone knows anything about Apple, is that they want to be in control of their own destiny. They don't want to be beholden to any third-party company. I mean, you can look back in their history all the way back into the 80s, and even dealing with, you know, having, you think Apple really liked dealing with Microsoft and having to have like Microsoft apps on a Mac because they didn't have any software library?
Yeah.
Of course they didn't.
No.
But in an ideal world, Apple would own and control and do everything themselves. They wouldn't have Intel processors. They'd make their own processors.
Oh, you
They'd
better believe that's
graphics.
Happening
it's,
too.
Well, yeah, of course, but it's only a matter of time. Yeah. Right? This is all expensive and complicated things to do.
Yeah. They like any third party entanglement they have, there is a plan to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. It's going to take time, it's going to take money, but all of those will eventually, the switch will be flipped, and they will have full control over everything that they make. What else? The other big thing, I think, is the iPhone. So, as I've said before, and as is looking increasingly likely, the major redesign of the iPhone is next year. And it's going to blow minds apart. It's probably going to be the biggest change to the iPhone hardware since the iPhone 4.
Is there any potential of getting slightly slimmer bezels on this one? Because I know the antenna lines are definitely going away for the most part.
So I'm not talking about this year's phone. I'm talking about the 2017 phone. This year's phone, not really sure what they're doing.
I agree with you on 2017's phone being the biggest design change, but there are design changes happening on this upcoming one.
A few. Year. Nothing major. Like right. this like I've
started.
It won't
be an all new body.
I've started calling it the iPhone 6X because that's kind of what it is.
Well, sure. It's not a complete new design.
Yeah. It's another S. The Plus is going to have the dual lens camera. They've changed the antenna line, so it's just a strip at the top and bottom. So the entire back of the phone is flush. But
weren't there rumors that eventually Apple might want, or maybe it is logical to get rid of the numbers, like iPhone 6, iPhone 7, iPhone 8?
I think
how long can you continue with that? We're going to have iPhone 50 at one point? I mean,
I'm fairly certain that that's happening next year. With that new design, right. They are basically going to say, this is the new iPhone, and that's it.
So you just have what, iPhone Pro, which is the Plus, the bigger one?
Yeah. So next year, it'll just be iPhone
right.
and iPhone Pro.
Actually, that would be better from a media and perception point of view. It'd be easier for people to understand. And maybe we wouldn't have the same kind of complaints that we have now, where people see this sort of TikTok thing. And then have like, I won't buy it because it's the S, even though it's all new hardware on the inside.
Yeah, the TikTok is dead.
You know, it's just like, they're iPhones.
Yeah.
Every year we have iPhones. We have a smaller iPhone. We have a larger iPhone. iPhone Pro.
Yeah.
That's all you need to know.
Yeah, exactly.
Couldn't be simpler.
That's exactly what they're doing. I mean, we now have an iPad Pro and an iPad Pro 9.7.
Yeah, you're right. I totally forgot, but that's a very clear indication where they want to go.
Yeah,
with it.
They're both iPads.
Actually, where's the place for the iPad Mini then? Because that seems to very confusingly.
That is
mess
a good
up
question.
The product line.
I have no idea where they're.
I
going
understand
with that.
Why they keep it because of the price, and they're obviously trying to get into this lower priced sector, which I don't have any issues with, but it certainly complicates the product lineup.
Oh yeah. I honestly have no idea what they're going to do with the Mini. That is kind of a blind spot. It's not really clear.
I guess the question whether or not to get rid of that, I guess, really depends on the volume of sales. Because if more people are buying iPhone Pros or iPhone Plus, the 6 Plus, whatever that we have now, if they're buying the larger 5.5-inch display, then you don't need an iPad. Like, why are you going to buy an iPad Mini that is only marginally larger and can't make phone calls?
You're not.
Like, no, of course. That was a rhetorical question.
Yeah. The iPhone Plus and soon the iPhone Pro will and is cannibalizing iPad Mini sales. Absolutely. And Apple never shies away from that. They are perfectly happy to release a product that kills sales of a previous product.
This is true. What about the Apple iPhone? Actually, this is something we should talk about because we talked about this offline on Slack, but the iPhone trade-in program, which is only available in the US, and you made some passing comment about how that's going to play into all these changes.
So the reason Apple is leaking that next year's iPhone is going to be huge.
How dare you make that accusation? How dare you?
Believe me, the only reason we know is because Apple wants us to know. That's how this works now. All of these magical leaks, where do you think they come from? Apple controls the narrative.
Tim Cook's on the phone. He wants
to talk to me. Yeah. Apple controls the narrative. They release these things. They tell people when to talk and what to talk about. It's all perfectly controlled now. All of those part leaks that happen to happen, no. This is all beautifully choreographed now. None of this happens by accident. In fact, after the iPhone 4 got left in a bar, that was basically the moment Apple decided to exert Gestapo-like control over all of it.
And murder that man's family. He's been erased. There's no existence
of
this man.
Who knows? But at this point, Apple controls the narrative of leaks. anything that gets leaked comes from them.
I like how they want it to be at WWDC or whenever they announce a new product, because obviously Apple reads the news and sees the rumors that are getting leaked. I like how they'll sometimes, like, Schiller will make a passing comment about whatever they're announcing, like, oh, as you may have heard.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's kind of a jab. Yeah,
I mean,
the media.
Like, the morning before, it's almost impossible to keep a lid on this stuff. Like, the morning before, people are just talking, and it's like, ah, now we know what it is. Ha. I'll give this one caveat. I think the only leaks that are actually genuine are the ones that come out of 9to5 Mac.
Oh, yeah, and Mark Gurman, for sure.
I don't know who the hell he knows, but somebody talks to him and tells him things that Apple really doesn't want getting out.
Has he ever made a public appearance? Maybe it's really Phil Schiller.
Yeah, he's a real person.
He's been on podcasts before.
He is a real person, but half the time, I'm not sure if he is actually being leaked information by Apple on purpose or if he is actually uncovering stuff. And they're like,
you know what? I mean, I never want to believe that it's happening on purpose. I just think he just happens to have this one person that may be a really good source that continues to remain anonymous.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's really what it all boils down to.
For him, that's possible. Every other leak, though, I firmly believe Apple is in control of that. Anytime a part leaks, anytime an analyst has an idea about something, that's Apple. If it's Mark Gurman, 50-50.
But anyone else... I'm going to disagree, but I mean, you're free to have that opinion. Because I don't know. I just don't want to believe that. I can't believe that Apple would intentionally... Why?
Because rumors are a story, and Apple wants to control that story.
Yeah, but don't you think that would happen? Those leaks would happen anyways. Like, isn't it natural that it is not 100% possible to keep a lid on all of that stuff because you have all these different third-party technology companies that are making parts for you? Yeah. Something is going to slip.
After a fashion, yes, but Apple can control the narrative right up until they start mass producing things.
You keep saying control the narrative. So give me an example.
So I'm getting to that. The reason they want people to know that next year's iPhone is going to be huge, and this is where it's definitely Apple, because who else would know that next year's phone is going to be huge? They haven't ordered any parts for it yet. They haven't sent blueprints to anyone yet.
They know what it looks like, though.
Yeah, they do internally,
right?
But only Apple.
Sure.
So that story is definitely coming out of Apple. It's not coming from a factory.
Whether it's intentional or not, that's a different...
Well, this is why it's intentional. Perhaps you're familiar with the Osborne effect.
I'm not sure I am.
So a company called Osborne made computers back
Harry
in the
Osborne?
80s. No. No, it's not Oscorp.
Okay.
So there was an Osborne Computing Company in the 80s, and they pre-announced that they were going to release a newer, faster computer in 1 year. Guess what happened to the sales of their current computer?
Oh, destroyed.
Yes.
Okay, I'm remembering this now.
So they were utterly smashed as a company. They went under because they pre-announced...
Wasn't this in the Steve Jobs bio?
Probably. Because they would have been a contemporary of Apple at the time. And henceforth, it's colloquially referred to as the Osborne effect.
Okay.
When a company pre-announces something so far in advance that it completely damages their sales in the present. So, how do you erase the Osborne effect?
By not pre-announcing something that far in advance?
By leaking that the next phone is going to be amazing, but then when this year's phone comes out, you announce that the iPhone upgrade program is going global and that everybody in the world,
that's the insurance policy.
Yes, exactly.
That makes sense. That's brilliant, actually.
So, we know that next year's iPhone is going to be this amazing, perfect, shining gem with a glossy as hell OLED screen and and wireless charging and whatever the hell else it has. We know that like 80 to 90% certain, roughly. And that hype is only going to build throughout the year.
Yes.
Then September rolls around with everybody knowing that this year's phone is kind of eh, and next year's phone is going to be amazing. Then Apple gets up on stage and says, we are rolling out the upgrade program.
And you have no
to 24 countries.
No worries, then.
All you have to do is walk into an Apple store, sign up, start paying $30 a month. You get the iPhone 6X.
And plus the trade-in value.
Trade-in value of your current phone. You get the iPhone 6X, brand new one, all the cool features that it has, and a guaranteed upgrade to next year's phone. So people knowing that next year's phone is amazing and knowing that they can walk into an Apple store and start making monthly payments to always have the new iPhone every year, they are going to make that leap.
That's diabolical.
Apple locks in everybody, millions of customers, to the upgrade program this year.
And you get a new phone, and you get a new phone, and you get a new phone.
Exactly. iPhone as a service.
No, it's brilliant. I think that's how it should work, actually.
And it allows them to amortize iPhone ownership over time. They're getting payments every month instead of everybody making a lump sum purchase every year or every other year.
My one concern is with that iPhones as a service, when iCloud Drive goes offline, your iPhone disintegrates. It turns into liquid metal.
Well, maybe next year's phone
and then, will. And then turns into the T1000 and kills you.
Yeah.
No, that's fantastic. I'm you know, being so, in Canada as the two of us are, I'm so looking forward to this because we'd be missing out on the iPhone upgrade program because we don't have it.
Yeah. So you heard it here first. Apple's evil plan to make us all sign up for iPhones every year.
Yeah, evil. I'll put in air quotes because it's not really evil.
Yeah.
It's just awesome.
And the best part, this completely subverts the growing trend of iPhone upgrade cycles stretching out to 3.5 years.
How is the iPhone upgrade program going to, would it not affect the sale of AppleCare? Because the idea with AppleCare is that you're going to have this phone for like 3 years, which now is going to become incredibly rare. Why would you want to spend $100 on AppleCare to keep a phone that is going to be...
You're not, but Apple isn't really concerned about AppleCare purchases. In fact, I would be willing to bet that a handful of all iPhone owners actually buy AppleCare. So, I mean, it probably doesn't factor into their decision-making.
I mean, I certainly would not buy AppleCare if I was on the upgrade program because I'm going to get a new phone next year.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll take my chances that I'm going to drop and completely shatter the glass, but...
Yeah. Yeah, I think they're more concerned about having the upgrade program in place because then they're getting volume per sales every month.
Yeah.
Like if millions of people are signed up for $30 or $40 a month... Imagine how much money they're generating every month.
This is going to be huge for them because this now...
It also allows them to subvert the carriers because the carriers are the ones...
Subvert the carriers and now they are going to allow this whole new market of people who suddenly could not afford an iPhone before.
Yeah.
Or refuse to break contract to upgrade, you know, they want the new one, but they can't afford to buy it outright. So this is going to change the game.
Yeah. And that's where I was saying the upgrade cycle. So over time, the amount of years that it takes for someone to switch to a new phone has increased. When the iPhone first came out, it was 1.5 years. Now it's up to 3.5. So that's loss of sales, loss of revenue. Apple switches to the upgrade program. People are paying in every month. They're always getting the new iPhone the entire time. There's no more waiting around 3.5 years for half your customers to buy the next phone.
Yeah, that's ludicrous.
Yeah.
That probably drives them even crazier than it does us.
Yeah. So and this is going to be the crazy part, because instead of reporting iPhone sales, they're now going to report upgrade program subscriptions. So they,
which are going to be massive.
Oh yeah. Like they'll be able to say, oh, we've got 300 million people signed up total.
Yeah. That'll sound good on the shareholder meeting.
Yeah. Like 300 million times 40 per month.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Dollar signs.
Evil plan.
Dollar signs.
Evil master plan. Yeah. And we're all going to fall for it. Willingly. Happily. It's going to be huge.
It's going to be huge.
Make Apple revenue great again.
You want to end right there?
Yeah.
We're coming up on an hour.
Yeah, it's good.
You've been listening to The Impromptu on Hologram Radio. I'm here with Michael Norton, as always. If you'd like to show your support for the show, head over to patreon.com/hologramradio and become a regular donator like some of the other lovely people who have decided to support our show and the network at large. And you can also show your support by going to hologramradio.org/sponsors and shop at Amazon, like we all tend to do these days, using our affiliate links. We have links for Amazon UK, USA, and Canada. There's no additional work needed on your part other than that 2-second effort to click the banner and buy all the stuff that's on your wish list. You can also show your support by subscribing to the show in iTunes, and you don't always have to spend money to show your support for the show. It really does mean a lot to us and helps us a lot when you subscribe to our show in iTunes or your podcast app of choice to ensure you get every new episode each and every week. And also another way to show your support is to leave a rating in iTunes. Leave a 5-star rating or comment, which helps other people discover the show. You can also follow us on Twitter. We're at The Impromptu. And if you'd like to follow us individually, Michael Norton is on Twitter at Zen Impulse. I'm Alex Knight on Twitter at Zero Distraction. And you can check out facebook.com/hologramradio to get updates on all of the shows on the network. Hologram Radio on Twitter, Hologram Radio Shows on Instagram. And if you'd like to send feedback to either of us, you can reach us by email. And that address is theimpromptu@hologramradio.org.
And on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.